drug I've done. Your love removes me from my throne. When you depart, I start to run. I'm chasing not to be alone. The light around you changes color with your mood, and I'm your follower. Your very life is an enigma, and I wanted you since we were children. La 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 la. To be with you, I've broken laws. I've hurt myself along the way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know you're worth the pain you cause. I'd die for you without delay. Changes color with your mood, and I'm your follower. Your very life is an enigma, and I wanted you since we were children. La 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 la.
Welcome to the Satellites Podcast Live, Season 2, Episode 6. Tonight's guest star, Tom Bocci, Ryan Krueger, and Brett Pierce. Here are your hosts, Aubrey Christine Trujillo and Jerry G. Angelo.
Hi!
Hey, guys. Thank you for joining us again for Satellites here. With Rocket Pig, we have in a little baby office here, so you get the you get to see one of our pictures, Arctic. Tom Bocci, our writer director of that one. So I actually signed this one, so it makes the value of the poster go up as well. The opening titles, see the music is from David Perry, which is with our music label Helium 3. So we're very excited to share those to that artist with you and those songs. And we'll be publishing our first soundtrack with the movie The Deception. We also have The Control Group and, of course, Obscura. Those are our first three films out the gate. That's the first time I said all those three films all together in one sentence. This is Aubrey.
Hi.
Say something. Tell us about how your week went. Or
oh, well, it's Monday, so yeah. It's just getting started. And did you know they're doing in-person auditions now? Whoa. That's does crazy. That mean the industry is getting back on its feet? We're all hoping so. Either way, Rocket Pig's here.
Yes. we have some great directors. We have a directing session tonight. What's important about this is directors are creatives. They're the ones that come and put the stories together, unique stories together, original stories. And what's fun for me is to get into their minds. Why this, why that? As an actor myself, I like to, just to see the different personalities you get to work with. I got the privilege of working with Tom, and during the hardest times of production and stuff like that, he stuck with me, and I'm always appreciative of that, Tom, because we did a great film and won a lot of awards, and Tom is going to be, getting off to some of his next projects as well. So let's go ahead and get started, and let's meet Tom. Where's Tom? Tom.
You ask yourself questions like, is the common denominator me all these times?
When alcohol for me was the people that used it that made me toxic. I've always found myself gravitating toward chaos.
Afraid of strangers, kid?
You just gotta be careful out here doing this.
A big farm right there, don't you?
This process that we talk about, do you think it's possible to get someone out of it while they're in it?
He's a boy. He's a good kid, but it seems like there's some broken support beams at home.
I'm gonna give you a countdown. I want you to come down on it as hard as you can. You hear me, boy? 3, 2, 1.
Something drew us here.
Not here with the wolves, huh?
Always bringing trash in here.
You are not a hero. You're gonna have to forgive me for what's coming.
Wait!
Game. You're gonna pretend that your life isn't already over.
Man, oh, that wow. Is wild and intense. We'll get to see Tom. Tom will be popping up here. Robert DeMond is one of our producers, and Angela. So thank you guys very much. There he
is.
There
he is.
Wow. Welcome. Oh, he's gonna show us.
Oh, and who is this?
Hold on. Cooper wants to say hello.
Hello, Cooper.
Cooper, what a face.
Coop. Oh, my.
Wow.
Oh, he's handsome.
Gosh, that's a big dog, man. Unless he's, you're really small.
He's actually my ghostwriter.
Oh.
That's cool. What kind of dog is Cooper?
Cooper is a Labradoodle.
That's just fun to say.
Labradoodle, yeah. Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming on to Satellites. I got to actually see you in person for quite some time. You're actually looking more like Arctic than Arctic himself.
Yeah. It's all in the beard, I guess.
Let's just jump right into it. How did you come up with the idea of Arctic, and what is Arctic?
Arctic is an idea that happened after my first move to North Hollywood, and I was sleeping in a warehouse on the floor and my car got broken into and someone spray painted ATK on the wall. And then I talked to a police officer and he said, oh yeah, that's you've been marked, so they're probably gonna come back. And I thought, oh, that's a really good idea for like a movie, like if someone was marking places. or sending out people to mark areas. Wow. And then that's like their signal, like their bat signal, you know, if you will. Wow. And they come and they're coming back. And so, yeah, I kind of took that idea and started to shape a project around that. And at the time, I was working for kind of like this in this big corporate environment, and everyone around me really didn't like what they were doing. But by the same token, they were huge fans of comic book movies. So it was like their like escapism was they would come in on Monday, on Monday morning, and tell everyone about the comic book movies they checked out. And it was like this weird disconnection from like what their actual lives, like what their actual life entailed. Hmm. And they would get in these like really intense debates about Marvel movies and all these DC movies and stuff. And it was just like really interesting watching people who were, you know, inherently unhappy, but then like that would, it's almost like they would identify as that, like, you know, you don't even understand like how important these films are and all this stuff. And so I thought it'd be really interesting to take the marking idea and combine it with this idea of someone who is disconnected with his normal life and trying to create his own comic book world, maybe working on his own comic book. And somehow he's cast himself as like this hero and he's completely disassociated with reality. So I was like, oh, maybe I could bridge the gap with that, you know, and see where that kind of, how that takes shape, you know? So that was, wow, that was the basic ideas. Like I was inspired by my normal everyday boring life, you know? And it ended up turning into like a movie, you know?
So would have Arctic happened if you didn't, was the catalyst of that happening, that story and the way that Arctic took place, would it have happened regardless of your car getting broken into or not?
No, probably not. I probably would have wrote some other movie about like going on a road trip or like, you know, like the Hangover 4, but it was like the alcohol free version, you know, just about drinking like too much pineapple juice or something like that. Like maybe eating too many Doritos or something. I don't think I would have done Arctic unless my car got broken into, because I remember right then having this weird aha moment of like, oh, is there any way I could turn this negative into a positive? And right when I thought that, like, and I got that kind of idea, that person came back and broke into my car again because I was marked. So they came back. And it was this weird, like, maybe I should take this as a sign.
Yeah. That's...
So, yeah, I don't know.
That's fascinating.
Not, honestly.
Well, I think it's fascinating because there's Martin.
Yep.
Tell us about who we see in the picture here.
That's Arctic himself, Jerry D'Angelo. That's me and Christopher Scott, great production designer, and Martin Moody, great cinematographer and great DP. You know, he's been shooting film all his life and it's like his biggest passion. And yeah, I've been working with Martin. We've done a lot of projects together for a long time. I think he's just, he like combines a lot of styles into one that I don't think a lot of people really focus on when they're shooting projects nowadays. Nowadays it's like about like conserving the budget, or it's about like, you know, who has access to that, to the biggest crane, you know what I mean? It's like, no one's really concerned with like, how does this genre work though? Or how does that style work? And so that's why I really like working with Martin, you know, when I get lucky enough to, is like this idea of, okay, well, let's sit down and try to break down how this might work. And how would you actually shoot it? How would you actually move the camera? If I'm doing a fight scene and someone's punching someone, how do I add power to that punch by just moving the camera, instead of like this whole idea of like, we got to get our coverage, you know, just that's, I feel like everyone knows that aspect of filmmaking. And so when you work with someone who is very experienced as a DP, they usually have a lot of other tricks that you could, you know, kind of pull from and see how you can pull off certain scenes without necessarily having to throw a bunch of money at them and things like that.
What was fascinating with working with you, Tom, I hadn't worked with anyone as closely in the areas that, like you just mentioned, because you're also the editor, and we didn't film full scenes all the time. And some of the scenes that you had, you knew exactly what you wanted, and it saved so much time. I mean, we were able to shoot Arctic in 11 days,
wow. Yeah,
which is pretty amazing on itself, but it has a lot to do, almost everything to do with how you were able to make the most of each situation. You already had this planned out with Martin.
Yeah, we had a plan together, and not only that, there were certain things that I knew I needed. And so this idea of staying there and eating up your budget, your scheduled time to get all this backup coverage, to me, I think is kind of like, I just don't think that's the best game plan for tackling, you know, what I guess you could call like your meat and potatoes. Everyone's got to start with your meat and potatoes, and then you put your sides in, you know. And for me, the meat and potatoes is how do I see this and how do I want it covered? Okay, so that's how I need to go execute it. If I go cover it in like the safe way, you're spending a lot of time doing stuff, you're repeating a lot of steps, and B, you know, and just for that idea of safety. And so it's like you're trying not to lose, but your game plan isn't necessarily to win. And B, if you shoot and only go after the shots you need, it puts a lot more pressure on you to do it right. And I think a lot of times people are so concerned with like, oh, we can't leave this location until we get, no, leave it. See what happens, you know? Try to do it. Try to do it in three shots. Let's see, you know? Because that's how you figure out, that's how you learn if you could really pull something off for a certain budget, if you really know what you're doing before you get there. Because a lot of times if you can't envision it in your head, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't mean that the editing is going to save it for you. It's not going to save your vision. You have to have the vision before you get there. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the two reasons why I always make sure to just get what I need and get out. And I always try to lay out a complete blueprint of everything before I get out there. And so then, yeah, when you're working with certain people, like working with Martin or working with a lot of times people work with VFX, you know, producers and things like that. And they lay out a plan for, okay, if we're shooting these green screen shots, we have five shots we need. So to stay there and do all this coverage of this and that, all you need is those things. And then for the rest of your day, you could execute a lot of other stuff that will be far more meaningful, you know, in the future. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of just like, it might be a weird way to look at things, but I think I like that additional pressure, that additional, like, we got to get it done by three and we're going to get it done, but we're going to fail. You know, you can't be afraid of failure. You know, that's like kind of the fun part. I don't know.
I like that philosophy. I think not aiming to lose, but also not focusing on the win. I think that's really hard to let go of. That's that perfectionist tendency of like, well, if I have it all planned out just perfectly, then it's all going to come in just this perfect little package. And of course, that's not how it happens. But if you, like you said, you're planning, not planning to lose, but enough to say that you're not going to plan on that perfect win either. I really love that. That's a really cool philosophy.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too, is just like this idea of, if you know what you want going into it, you spend more time crafting those shots. Like you'll work with your DP to get something that feels more dynamic and kinetic and flows much better. And then the whole crew works together trying to accomplish a smaller task. And if you're just doing coverage, I mean, you know, just next time you're on a set where you're just doing coverage, just look around. I mean, how many people are just doing coverage? Like three people, and the rest of the people are on their phones, you know? Yeah. No one cares about you. No one cares about your project. So make them care, you know, get everyone involved on one shot. Let's see how it feels then, you know?
Yeah. And we did that. And we shot where?
We shot in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
How did you like Albuquerque?
You know, it's all right. But man, there's like Albuquerque really reminds me of Bakersfield. And I don't know if you know anything about Bakersfield, but one time I was in Bakersfield and I was going to get gas and it was next to a strip club. And I was like, that's crazy, isn't it? That's so funny. There's a gas station next to a strip club, almost like you need to skip town after you leave the strip club. And then I looked to my left, and there was a strip club. So in Bakersfield, there's a strip club across the street from a strip club. So, you know, Albuquerque's reminds me slightly of that, except they have great food there.
Very cool. Well, we're gonna bring on another one of our guests, who you're very familiar with, right? With Brett.
That's right, Brett. Yeah.
Hey, how about you tell us a little bit about Brett?
Brett did a film with his brother called The Wretched, and I met Brett in Germany at a film festival. I was there with Arctic, and I think they're like very creative, and they really understand how to attack a project and get it done the way it needs to be done. And they're definitely going for like a specific vibe, a specific tone. I still there.
I apologize, Tom. It looks like we lost Jerry and Aubrey. I'm sure they're going to be coming back in soon. We're going to go ahead and introduce Brett, and we're going to show the trailer for The Wretched.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, neighbor.
You see anything weird outside your house, you tell me, all right?
Dad. Mom's being weird.
Mom's always been weird.
What are you doing up here?
Dad,
don't let her in.
My son likes to play hide and seek. Can you bring him down?
I didn't say he was here.
You're a very stupid boy.
Can I help you?
Is Dylan home?
Dylan, down here, baby.
You know, your son, Dylan, I don't have a son.
He had no idea who I was talking about.
Listen to Mommy! Daddy, Dylan!
He's gone. I know it.
Is he up?
I'd like to report a missing kid.
Are you okay, Ben?
Where is your sister?
I need you to tell me what's going on! I need you to tell me what's going on!
Wow, that looks intense.
Thanks.
Wow. Brett, man, tell us, that's a creature feature if I've ever seen one. What inspired the story?
I mean, it kind of started with Drew and I. Just, we were super fascinated with a bunch of different witch myths from around the world. We just kind of had a thing for it where we're like, I want to make a movie about one of these like witches from these other cultures. And we just kind of kept reading a bunch of stuff. And we came across this one witch called Black Annis, also called Black Annie. And she was this creepy monster that lived in a witch that lived in a tree and would steal children out of their bed and eat them and like, you know, keep her fingers in her pockets and stuff like that. So it was this very creepy idea. And we just really liked it. And I wrote like a full draft of a really bad Black Annie script that we didn't make. So, and Drew read it and said, hey, I got some ideas. And we kind of jammed on a whole different draft where there was this other witch that Drew liked a lot called the Boo Hag, which was kind of like a skinwalker, like a witch that wore other people's skin, pretended to be them. So we kind of took the Black Annis myth and the Boo Hag myth, and we kind of meshed them together. And that was kind of our story. That's how we got to that one. So,
and tell us who Drew is.
Drew's my brother, and he's my co-writer and directing partner. We do everything together. We've been together too much. It drives his wife nuts. We shared a bedroom till we were about 25 or 26. So wow. we're never apart. He actually just left because we were working all day. So
cool. Well, what do you guys do when you're not making film, or is that what you do?
Well, the Wretched did really well, so that's all we do now. So it's like we just work on the next thing every day, which is cool. Before that, it was, we both had day jobs, you know, like I was working in reality TV as like a reality TV producer, and he was a storyboard and poster design artist for a lot of movies. So,
wow.
Nice.
So we were juggling both ends, trying to make it work. And, you know, looks like it finally got to a point where we can at least say, this is a job.
That's cool. Great. That's a great accomplishment. Yeah. In regards to that, for our, those are watching, what is it that takes you to that next level that allows you to stop everything else and be able to just focus on film, like with Wretched?
For us in this case, it was the movie doing really, really well for the most of the summer and like getting a lot of attention to where people wanted to be involved with us. They just wanted to know what we were going to make next. So we just started being brought in on meetings that we'd never had before with people we never thought we'd be talking to about the next thing. And, you know, just started pitching them our ideas, and they would come to us with ideas for things they wanted to make. And, it, you know, at first you're like, man, I hope one of these things kind of works out. And then one of them starts, you know, you get that first time you actually get paid to do something. Yeah. We're kind of like, oh, this is a job now. I'm not just doing this for fun. You know, I mean, it's always for fun more than anything else, but it's still, that's the big step. But I think it was more just because, you know, we put everything we had into this movie. Like, it was 5 years from us talking about making it to getting it finished and out in theaters. And we're just always picky with each other about never letting it, like, anytime we talk about, like, we got to always give it 110%, even if it's about, like, picking up food for the shoot. You know, it's just always got to be 110%. It's getting a little better.
How many days did it take you to film Wretched, if you remember?
Well, we went back to Michigan, where Drew and I grew up, and we shot for 26 days in Michigan, in northern Michigan. It was great. I mean, we got really lucky. We found a old, beautiful bed and breakfast in northern Michigan near where my brother's in-laws live. And we convinced them to let us shoot there. That's where most of the movie takes place. And there was also this really beautiful marina that was close by that his in-laws also taught sailing school there. So we were able to convince the local city to be like, hey, can we shoot at the marina? And they were really sweet and said, yeah, just make a $200 donation and you can shoot there as much as you want, as long as you don't shut it down. And we're like, no, you guys can in the background. That makes our movie look more expensive. So it was great. It was really fun to go back home and like kind of go out in the middle of nowhere into the woods and like shoot a movie, like kind of like you did when you were in high school with all your buddies. So but just bigger scale, but fun. So yeah.
Where did you and Tom connect at?
We were at the Hardline Film Festival in Germany. And Tom was just like, I don't know, we just gelled immediately. We're all staying in the same hotel. And we just would like, you know, I think all of us are like, you know, you're always like you feel like a poor filmmaker when you go to like a film festival, because you usually got there on a credit card and you're just like, oh man, I just want to show my movie. So we were all taking advantage of the free breakfast in the hotel every morning, which was delicious. And we just, yeah, we kind of met up and just started watching movies together and hanging out at night and kind of made a little there was like five or six of us, other directors there too, and we just became buds and kind of made it a big fun festival for all of us. So it was great.
Wow. Yeah. Did Tom and did you guys get to see each other's film, Arctic and Wretched? Did you guys?
I saw Wretched not in Germany, but in which festival? I saw it at a different festival that I went to that you, I don't think, were able to make it to. But then I also...
Did you see it at Grimfest? Was it at Grimfest? Is that where you went?
Yes, that's right. Grimfest, which was right after Hardline in Manchester. Yes. So, and then I also rented it, and I think I bought it through Vudu. Just because if I know anybody who has a movie out, I just always go rent it or buy it. Just because, you know, I know my $8 purchase isn't going to change the world, but I feel like it does.
It's the principle of it, you know. Yeah. I think the same
you
thing.
You pay rent now, Brent.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've even done that other times with friends' movies where I'll have a streaming service that it's on, but I'm like, I'm going to go rent it on Amazon Prime just because I know that's my friend's movie and I should pay for it. So
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brett, I have a question for you. Or actually, I have multiple questions, but I'm going to try to wrap it into one.
Yeah.
Can you tell Jerry and Aubrey about your dad, the film he worked on, and did you grow up listening to any stories about said film?
Yeah, my dad was one of the two effects artists on the original Evil Dead when I was growing up. So like when I was like 2.5 or 3, my mom let all those goofy fellas move into her house essentially and take over the basement, and they finished like the big finale effect scene, like a big meltdown scene with a demon and hands coming out of the stomach. That was like my dad's claim to fame. And they spent the summer finishing the movie there and like completely destroyed my mom's house. But and broke all the mirrors doing effect shots and stuff. But it was great as a little kid. I mean, as a little kid, it was a little terrifying because I actually snuck down into the basement and watched them. Like one time Dad had thrown up a sheet and was projecting his rough version of the end of the movie up on a wall. And Sam and all the guys were there. And I was like 2.5 and I came down the stairs because I just wanted to know what Dad was doing. And I saw like this horrific sequence like play out. And they didn't know I was watching. They like turned the lights on and there was just this little kid just like standing there like,
wow.
Like, so I had this like complete irrational fear of my basement to like the age of 15. Because it was just like, it was the world of nightmares down there, you know? Yeah. So.
Well, that's legitimate though.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's man.
Amazing.
That's our witch.
Wow. This witch. So she's incredible. Did you cast somebody that was like very gaunt and very lean or to begin with? Or is this like just kind of.
Yeah, well, Drew and I just had put a notice out for, we were asking for people that were like dancers that were really good with their body, maybe had done ballet, because we needed somebody that could emote all the weird creature movements. And we were definitely looking for somebody very tall and thin, just because it kind of helped when you build up creature stuff on people. It's like they start looking bulky and not kind of creepy if it's sitting on top of them.
No, so man.
Found a woman. She was like 22, I think we found her, Madeline Stunkel. She was just a dancer that out of Michigan that sent us a tape of her crawling at the camera in weird ways and growling and acting strange. And she just had these great movements, and she had never done anything for a film or a feature, or filmed anything. And we kind of plucked her and said, "Hey, do you want to do this?" And she was so great. She killed it on set. She had one of the hardest jobs because, I mean, we were in Michigan and this was like in May and we're in northern Michigan, so it might as well be winter. It's freezing outside. Like, and we're shooting at night and she's in something that's like so thin, like she might as well be there in her underwear in a lot of cases. And she's just freezing. She was having to crawl through mud and water. But she loved it. Like, it was like she was just always happy. So we were kind of like, if anybody should have been complaining and getting mad at my brother and I for, you know, torturing them, it should have been her. But kind of because she never complained, none of the other actors could complain because they got to wear like, you know, big heavy coats and all this other stuff and be warm. So.
Same much.
Sure. Yeah. Well, the one of the great things about shooting on location is that you get to soak that up, and you know, and we know, and Tom and I know that firsthand also from doing shooting in the dead of winter in New Mexico, where you're getting I think it was like 0 degrees or 15 degrees or something, is that you're playing with real elements. There's no, you know, there's no faking it.
Yeah.
And those play into it. And, you know, most of the time I think, and for myself too, when I'm in those conditions as an actor, you know, I always know is that this, you know, this is going to make everything, you know, better and more intense and more everything. And you lose a lot of that in studio films. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference because, you know, you walk right out from a nice heated, a camp or not a camper, but a room or some, you know, something, and everything's already set up for you very nicely, which is, you know, cool too. But these elements is what we get to bring to the table that you'll never get to see these things again. This will be, you know, anyway.
Yeah. I told you it's good to be in the elements, because you get that like invisible quality on screen that you don't realize that you're getting, like even just being there, everybody being able to like literally look around and see everything. I mean, that's a big element of practical effects, like as opposed to doing like a CG creature. It's like everybody can look at Madeline and they're like, that looks disgusting. Yeah. Like, and they were amazing, you know, like looking at it. Like,
yeah.
Did you get to see Arctic?
What's
did
up?
You see Arctic?
At the unlike Tom, yeah, didn't see my movie in Germany. I saw tons in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
It was great. Yeah.
From one director to another, like I'd like to have you guys in a conversation with each other about each other's film and just let's like eavesdrop on this.
Oh, so Brett actually has Brett and Drew came up with a great jump scare in their movie, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but how did you lay out? There's a scene with the baby, I guess you would call it like a baby crib.
Yeah.
How did you lay out that scene? Were you conscious of the fact that, hey, what's going to sell this is our composer? Or do we need to move the camera in a specific way to really tell this, to kind of trick the eye?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for us, it was a mix. I mean, my brother and I are like extreme preppers when it comes to shooting stuff. We storyboard the whole movie before we shoot, and we shot list the whole movie. Not that things don't change, because it's making a movie and there's always, you know, the house blew up, you can't use it anymore, you know, or something happens. But we had storyboarded the whole thing, and we had, I mean, it was actually one of those things where like, I think we bit off a little more than we could chew, because we didn't realize like there's a baby and a creature and a 30 person crew around a baby. It's like, how do we get him to be quiet? And like, he's crying. So like, and it was late, it had to be nighttime, so we're keeping a kid up later than we wanted to. Good thing it was Drew's, my brother's son, my nephew, so he works for free. But we had to like do this
thing. Wasn't part of SAG yet, or
no, but we had to turn all the lights off in the house and kind of bring him from outside, and all the crew had to like hide in the hallways, and we all had to be quiet and like gently put him in the crib. And everybody had to pretend like we weren't shooting a movie, just like we were putting a baby to bed so that he wouldn't like, you know, react. Yeah. And we put him down and we just shot him rolling around the crib a little bit. And then we took him out of there, and it's a composite shot. Then, because we were like, I can't scar my nephew and have this horrible creature like crawl up on him in the crib. I'll be the worst uncle of all time. So then we brought Madeline in and we shot her next to an empty crib. We didn't move the camera. We locked it in place. And then we composite it together later on. But it was just one of those things where it took us a long time to do that. And it wasn't that many shots, but we were just like, in hindsight, I was like, man, I didn't realize how tricky this just little bit was going to be, but right. It was cool. Yeah. I'm glad we did it. It's just at the time it just took, we were just like, oh my God, this baby's going to like go crazy if he doesn't go to bed soon. And also this is just like eating up a third of our day.
And how much CG do you think was in the, how much VFX, you know, in terms of Madeline, was there any VFX to accentuate anything?
Only time we accentuated anything, like she's pretty much 99% of the time totally practical. Like he is, like the creature design and everything is. The only time is there was one part, it sounds bad. she was feeding on a child in the movie, and we didn't feel like she had enough of the blood look on her mouth. Right. So we went and kind of painted in a little bit just to make it a little more red and a little more disgusting. But that was like that was like the only CG we like did on the creature. Like all the digital effects work in the movie is really boring. It's like, get rid of that boom shadow, you know?
Yeah.
That crew member peeked in for half a second. We got to get rid of them. You know, it's like, I feel bad for our digital guy because he did amazing work, but it's like thankless cleanup work, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. We had a lot of cleanup work on Arctic as well. But in terms of actually, you know, like the character of Arctic, I would say, you know, all of it was Jerry, except for there's, you know, I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but there's a couple times where someone, you know, there's weapons involved that go through certain parts of the body.
The people getting impaled.
And there was certain there was a, you know, a bit of special, you know, special effects while we were there, practical effects. And then there was a need to, you know, make it a little more gruesome. And in addition to making it a little more gruesome, kind of like make that wound feel like it really did the job on someone. So, yeah, I mean, we did a lot of that type of stuff where it was like shooting with the end result or the start of whatever that thing was, someone getting killed, someone getting stabbed. And then we would just kind of complete everything with visual effects. And the weird thing is that's kind of like a thankless thing too, because if the visual effects artist does it well, then everyone's like, dude, you used all practical effects. That's so great. Who's your special effects person? It's like, actually that was a guy named Curtis. Never even there. He's just awesome at what he does. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like one instance in the Wretched where somebody's watching somebody with binoculars. And obviously we just shot that without the binocular wraparound.
Yeah.
And he the digital artist painted it all in. He made it look like it was kind of coming through a glass. So it kind of morphed the image a little bit. And we're all like, that's amazing. That's so great. Nobody's ever going to know that was a thing.
Yeah. People are going to be like, oh, that works. Perfect.
Yeah.
Great shot.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's.
How did you like with your Tom? How many days did you shoot? You said 12?
11 days.
So, 11 days. Holy crap.
So
for you, how did you even schedule that? How did you get the level of production design that you had in? Because the sets and the locations look amazing, you know, so it's like with that time frame. So,
yeah, I think we lucked out in that we had Jerry was able to track down a tremendous location that kind of let us meld together our other locations. So let's say if Arctic has a total of 11 locations.
Yeah.
And we have 11 days to shoot it. Well, we're on our primary destination. We were there for about 9 days. So we were able to take all those other things and spread them out to where like from 8 to 1, what we're going to do is shoot this location. And then when the sun comes up, we're going to go over here and shoot, you know, just move our stuff 15 yards that way. And shoot everything there. And we would kind of keep doing that so we could always stay busy. And it was almost like we were knocking out 2 or 3 days every day. And the other thing is just me and the DP I worked with, we usually plan out stuff a lot like you do with your brother. And I was the one who was editing it all. So I kind of knew what I needed.
And I
knew that I didn't need a lot of coverage in certain areas. I just needed this part of this conversation and that part of this conversation.
Yeah.
I just need Jerry on the close-up for that line. I don't need close-ups on any. I know I want to go to the close at the end for dramatic effect, so I don't need to film the top of the scene in that angle. Let's just get everything boom here, there, and then let's move the lights in a little bit, and then you got that last shot, move on.
Yeah.
It was very quick. So I actually think the main kind of challenge next time around is figuring out, I mean, it sounds weird, but the idea is how do I get even quicker at this, you know, because it's not that I'm going to try to do something in 10 days next time, but the idea is if I have all my elements down and I know what I need for an action scene, is there a way to only show up that day with the exact people I need to have, you know, boots on the ground?
Yeah.
And can we move faster that way? Like if I strip stuff away, or what's going to help me if I bring 20 more people or if I get rid of 20 people and I only have 5 people on set that day. You know, I'm not sure. I haven't really figured that out yet, but I've been.
Yeah, that's a weird
thing. Milling that over for a while.
It's a weird fight because, like, I did my first movie was like super, like, small group, barely any of us, and kind of like not really any organization either. We were just making a movie in the woods. It was this other one called Deadheads. And then this one was like, I had departments and we had all this stuff. Right. At the same time, it's so funny. It's like sometimes I would just get that itch because I'm like, man, I can move faster when it's just us and a few people.
Right.
And there are huge benefits to this, these like teams and stuff now. But there's also times where I'm like, man, this is slow. You know, it's like it could be fast. You know, so it's funny. I get.
I'd love to figure out a way if there's a smarter way to lay out a schedule. Like, you know, I'm sure there's filmmakers before us who are way better at this. You know, and maybe this is something we'll learn as we go. But like, you know, maybe it's a thing where your first 5 days you want as many people there as possible. But day six, maybe you want 7 people there and that's it. You know, I don't know. There's got to be some sort of trick.
I ran this one. It was just more organization dictated schedule more than anything else. And a lot of it had to do with like actor schedules because of meetings and stuff. And you're just like, oh, I got to get this person and I got to get rid of them as soon as possible. And then I can bring them back. And it was so crazy. I was just like, and it would blow my mind sometimes. Like, we have to send them back to Los Angeles and then bring them back because that makes more sense. I was like, okay. Yeah.
And Jerry, when you were producing Arctic, what was the biggest hurdle for you? Because, you know, you knew we had 11 days. Originally, we had talked about it. We wanted to do like 15 days. And I was like, all I need is 10. And you were like, well, let's be safe. Here's 11.
Yeah. Well, first, the biggest challenge for Arctic was just staying within the budget because you put your own money up there. So every dollar that was spent needed to have maximize its production value, but it also, you know, every dollar you spent was coming out of your, you know, out of everything that Tom had. He put everything into Arctic, and it was very important that he got everything he needed. And one of the once we had an amount of money here from the time that Tom contacted me based off of the American Warfighter trailer. Within a couple of days, we got together for a coffee. And from that initial meeting, I think within 6 weeks or so, we were already filming Arctic in Albuquerque filming. So, you know, budget from the get-go was always small. And then it had to get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger just because there were some key components that Tom really needed. One is with Martin having, you know, one of the best cameras that we had, the Ari, right?
Yeah.
So that was I want to almost say a quarter of our budget, if not maybe a little bit more, went to our camera package. So that becomes, you know, that was pretty much the biggest hurdle. And then after that, it's just making sure that the workflow is set up to where, you know, so Tom can be a director and stuff. And then
I think the biggest challenge for us was just making sure we didn't get behind on the schedule, because like when you only have 11 days, it's just like if we literally miss an hour, like if we're late by an hour, like we might get behind on the schedule, we may lose a day, you know. So that was a big challenge, but we were able to, you know, move stuff around when we needed to. And you know, like thankfully we ran into a lot of people that just by design that, you know, were in the right place at the right time, that were up for helping, you know, in these kind of like above and beyond ways. You know, we met, a guy who really wanted to be kind of our transpo captain, and we're like, great, because, that's not a department that we knew existed. And he's like, and also, my son really wants to be in a movie, and also my wife runs a school. So if you need a location to shoot, like maybe an AA meeting, you need a big boardroom, something like that, you know, we could totally do it, you know. And it was like,
and also comes with an RV, comes with the, all the vehicles for the movie.
Yeah.
All the generators, you know, like it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And so those were, you know, those were some of, just the resources from me, from coming from Albuquerque and living there, you know, just being able to put those together.
Right.
So, Brett, I wanted to say that we didn't have any sunflowers because we were shooting.
Oh yeah, you guys have all those crazy sunflowers
in the middle of winter. So we were very strategic, and I was I thought Tom did an incredible job with all that.
And I think that was another thing that sped us up too, is because we knew we were going into a completely empty field. So it was very easy to kind of like draw out for everyone who was acting in it, like, hey, we're going to put these two sticks down and you need to run in between them. And so it was very easy to just like imagine what would be there and get what we needed. And very quickly, with the way we shot it, we realized that once we were laying in the visual effects and laying in all these like plants and stuff, we realized that theoretically we could turn the image in any direction and that shot would have worked because the field's completely empty with nothing telling us which direction is where and how. And so that really sped up the process, because if we had all those like practical elements there, we would have had to, I mean, we would have had to fight the elements. We literally had nothing there. And so sometimes like having nothing is actually the best option because you can only go up. So
yeah,
it really worked to our favor because everyone always compliments me on like this great sunflower field we found. And I'm like, we didn't do that.
Yeah, I remember when I talked to you about it. I was like, really? Yeah. I was like, oh, I had no idea.
And that's another one of those unsung visual effects, you know, great visual effects artist puts that together and people just, it looks so clean that everyone's like, oh, great, that's, you shot in a sunflower field. Great, great shot, great location manager. It's like, Well, we shot in a parking lot, actually. Really, you should be thinking this guy named Antonio. Yeah.
Ryan, we have one more guest that we'd like to bring on, Ryan Krueger. Unfortunately, he's unable to actually come on live. So we were lucky enough to get some videos. We also want to share some spots. Before we go into that, we just want to thank our subscribers who have come to us through Facebook, YouTube, Anchor, Apple iPod, Spotify. Thank you so much for subscribing. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of our amazing guests. Want to personally thank Alexi Angelino and Jared Allen for tuning in and commenting and being here tonight.
Jared is one of our artists. He's Mississippi Jukes, so he's he's one of our country artists, and we've been writing a lot of stuff together, and excited to be going to be introducing Mississippi into the whole Hollywood mix of everything. And what I want to say about Ryan Krueger is in South Africa, and there's a storm happening there, so he's having some internet difficulties. But our producer Robert Damon has some videos and pictures and stuff. So, Brett, do you know Ryan?
I haven't met Ryan.
You haven't met Ryan. Okay, cool. But you have, Tom.
Yeah, I've interacted with Ryan many times before. Ryan also runs a film festival in South Africa, and yeah, he's a super talented filmmaker. So, you know, he's just like Brett and Drew, very talented. They know what they're going after, and his movie is very interesting. Fried Berry. It's a lot of interesting. You know, he captured a very interesting performance, which I'm sure he'll tell you about. A lot of improv thrown in, and yeah.
All right, so Robert, go ahead and let's share some work from Ryan, and maybe by this time he's been able to jump on with us too. I'm not sure, but let's go ahead and check out some of his work.
The data streaming is corrupt.
Error.
The data streaming is corrupt.
Error.
The data streaming is corrupt.
Error.
The data
streaming is corrupt. The data streaming is corrupt.
Error.
Oh shit, it's just Hazer.
shit.
Okay, I'm ready. Ready? Think you had enough? You sweating yet?
So, yeah, it was literally when I decided, you know, that I was going to make a feature film, then it was basically, you know, I spoke to my co-producer and I said, you know, I want to make a film. I want to make it next month. And he's like, why do you want to make it next month? And I was like, because if we don't do it next month, it's never going to happen. And he's like, have you got money to make the film? And I was like, well, I've got some money and you've got some money and we can do this thing. And he's just like, have you got a script? And I was like, no, but the idea that I want to do, you know, I want to develop it as we go. And I basically wrote like a 50% brief scene breakdown. And then from there, I started, as we were filming, I started adding, you know, added more of the script and the ideas, but also I didn't want to have anything set in concrete. So it was really, really being organic and being in the moment and working with the actors on set and, you know, doing improv and stuff like that. So it was very important for me to be really creative and be really open and just be in that organic field where, you know, there's no rules and really living in that moment. And I think that's what made Fry Barry quite, you know, quite special. And, you know, we shot it over a year and a half, but we only shot like 28 days in total. I think if we had to shoot it 28 days straight up, the film probably wouldn't have been as good as it was, because the nice thing about it was, you know, we shoot and then plan and then shoot.
Wow.
No. Well, I don't even
know. Oh my gosh.
Sheesh. Yeah, that was, I'm not even sure what I just saw. That was pretty awesome.
I got chills.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm curious. What do you think about that, Brett?
I haven't seen the movie yet, but I give him all the credit in the world for, like, I'd be terrified to make a movie if I didn't have the script yet. But he was like, sounds like he's just like a creative force, which is awesome.
That is quite amazing. And you had the pleasure of meeting him, Tom, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Ryan? I think Ryan can see us and hear us right now, but like I said, there's a storm interference that doesn't allow the feed to go through. But tell us a little bit about Ryan. I mean, that was fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I think from everything that I can recall, Ryan originally had this film Fried Berry as a short, and I remember going to lots of film festivals with the previous short film I had, and every film festival I went to, the short version of Fried Berry was there. So we had kind of always been on each other's radars for quite a while, and then I remember he had started to work on the feature version. And what was interesting is, like he was saying there, he would kind of shoot a little bit and then they'd schedule out another day, you know, a month later, and they'd shoot a little bit more, and they kind of just kept going that way. And
that's
what
wild.
They ended up with was like this interesting thing, because if you think about it, you know, Brett and Drew did The Wretched, and they were there with that character. Even though they had worked on the film for 5 years, they were there with that character on set for 28 days. But if you're on set for a year and a half, theoretically, you would come back and maybe have new ideas, new presentations. Maybe there's something you didn't think of in that 28 days where, you know, that were back to back that, you know, hindsight's 2020, that you would have been like, oh man, the best way to do that scene would have been like this. And you think of that 9 days after your rep, you know? So that's kind of a cool thing about his feature. And his feature is, it's very fun, you know? I think that he'll probably have some news about it pretty soon. And yeah.
Before we had a green screen or green room before this episode of Satellite started. And because of the storm that was happening, it's actually like 3 o'clock in the morning there. What we were able to do was send him some questions, and then Ryan went ahead and made some clips of himself giving some answers. So we're going to go ahead and implement this. And just like the first one you just saw, he just literally was able to do that in this time that all of us were having this conversation. So go ahead and Robert, and you can show another clip, and then we can make a comment on that. And maybe we go back and forth a few times.
Hey guys, I'm Ryan Kruger, the director and writer of Fry Barry. What inspired me to make Fry Barry was, it's basically where I was at the time in my career. I'm known as a music video director, and you know, it's always been that plan to make, you know, to make feature films, and went through a pretty tough time. Had something wrong with my kidney, got sepsis, nearly died, cat got cancer, which he's all right now, he's sitting over there, and on top of that, yeah, I just went into depression and I just went down this like black hole, and I've never been like depressed before. So at the bottom of this pit, I was just basically like, you know, what is the number one thing that I've always wanted to do? And it was, you know, to make a film. And yeah, and that basically I got the idea, came to me, and I just decided, you know, I've got to make this film and I've got to start shooting it next month or it's never going to happen.
Oh, well, bless your heart, Ryan. Hopefully you can hear me, but man, every single person I know in my life at some point, you know, we get into depression and the world is against us. And man, the fact that you were able to pull through this and come up with something and go with this inspiration is just fascinating. I'm very excited.
Turn it into gold.
Yeah, to see your work and what an incredible imagery. There's all the different genres, and for people that are into this genre are just going to be, like I keep saying, fascinated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even your choice of music and being able to put that stuff together. And seeing something like that is so far different than what I'm, you know, that I, you know, my thing is something completely different. This is awesome. It's pretty awesome. Did you want to say something on that?
Oh, I just think it's fascinating. I think that the imagery, I kept getting chills from one image to the next. And I think I'm really inspired by the fact that you took a dark moment and turned it into art. That's, I think, some of the most incredible things come from that. So thank you for turning your struggle into something that the rest of us can enjoy and learn from.
Yeah, and with that said too, Ryan, also make sure that you give time to yourself and appreciation to yourself because you deserve it. You know, we usually don't do that for ourselves, but I think we become stronger human beings when we give ourselves credit that we didn't give up because we're so hard on ourselves. I know I'm hard on myself, and I don't know. We've all seen their art. I remember you said Tom mentioned, you know, he was on a basement and sleeping in a closet and editing, you know, and coming to the country or, you know, just under all these incredible circumstances, but you were inspired and, you know, you didn't give up, man. And like you put everything you had into Arctic, every financial dollar you had, you put it in there and you made it work. That's remarkable. It really is. Admiration to the 10th degree.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I mean, Brett and Drew did the same thing too, you know?
Yeah. And I know a little bit less. Brett, can you share with us a little bit more in that sense of what, you know, what it took for you guys to get, you know, get off the ground? It might not have been the Wretched. It might have been before that.
Yeah, we had I kind of all dated back to like when I was 22, I got diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I had cancer and I was going to school for film, but we weren't making anything. We weren't doing anything. And it just kind of kicked us into gear because, you know, mortality kind of freaks you out. So we decided that right after I got better. First, we took a nice, really fun trip to Europe and had a good time, made, you know, reminded myself that life was great when you beat cancer. And then we came back and we just said we had to move to Los Angeles and try to make films, you know, because we've been trying to do them back home, but it just wasn't working out. And we moved to Los Angeles and got like, you know, we're broke for a long time, but then finally started getting semi-decent jobs. But we realized like where we were at, I was working on an animated show and so was my brother. And we just looked at each other and we said, hey, we're not making our own stuff. We're making other people's stuff for them. And it's cool. We're having a great like creative jam session, but I think we need to quit our jobs and go make a movie. You know, so we quit our jobs and I took out a school loan, pretended going to college and took out a school loan to pay for a part of that movie. Begged a bunch of other people to give me a little bit of money. And we went and shot this little movie in Michigan. And it turned out pretty well. We had a really good film festival run. We got on Netflix. It was really cool. But then we came out of it and we're like, oh my God, we're both flat broke. In fact, we're more in debt than we were when we started, you know, and we're broke again. We're like starting over. So we had to go back and like, we came back from directing our first feature and had to work as PAs for like 2 years on everybody else's movies. And it was the same thing. We kind of worked ourselves out of debt and got really good jobs again. Like Drew was had a great job at the Jim Henson Company, and I was producing reality TV show stuff for a good company. And we just kind of looked at each other like, we're making other people's stuff again, man. How does this happen? You know? And I was like, I think we got to quit our jobs. So it's kind of like, you know, your mom and your dad and everybody in your family's like, why are you quitting a good job? I'm like, well, because I have this art in my heart. And they're like, that sounds great.
Like, good for you, little bro.
Yeah. So then you quit again. And, you know, well, and also weird side note, me and Drew joke about this, that it always takes me almost having to die for us to make something else. So like in between the cancer thing, I got hospitalized for like 12 days because my appendix ruptured and they thought I was going to die.
Oh my God.
And I kind of came out of that and I was like, we got to make a movie. So the joke is Drew's like, Brett's got to like, you know, almost die. And then we get, you know, motivated enough to go make a movie.
Yeah.
So.
Have you thought about maybe just watching a Tony Robbins tape or something to get some money?
Yeah. I think this time I'm just going to like, just make the movie and not like, you know, take it to those extremes anymore. Cause it's not fun. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I think we have some more Ryan's questions. So if we can go back to one of those again, Robert, that'd be great.
So Fry Barry is basically about a heroin addict that gets abducted by aliens, spat back out on the streets of Cape Town, South Africa. And this alien takes him on this joyride through Cape Town with drugs and sex. And yeah, it's just a crazy, weird, offbeat movie that's unpredictable. Yeah, and as for the other guests on tonight, sorry I couldn't make the video call. I think there's like a storm brewing up here, so the internet connection is really bad. But yeah, Brett, I haven't seen The Wretched yet. I've seen the trailer. It looks great. I really want to check the film out. And Tom, we've spoken many times before, and you know, obviously we played Arctic at the SA Indie Film Fest in South Africa, which went down really well. And yeah, I really enjoyed your film, as I've said before. And Jerry, very great performance. And yeah, I think Jerry had like, you know, a lot of presence in the movie, and I dig your voice in the movie, which is pretty cool. And then Tom, you know, I've said before with the music of the film is, yeah, it's awesome. Like I really enjoyed the music and the, you know, and the pace of the film. And yeah, and the, a lot, you know, all the characters that was in Arctic, it was cool. I think they all had a, you know, a really solid performance.
Oh, that's so cool. So Ryan was referring to Corey Wallace. Who put our soundtrack together? Holy dang, man!
Yeah,
Tom, what you and Corey came up with is just wonderful. I would like you to share a little bit about the music, and then Brett, we can share a little bit about your sound design as well, the soundtrack. But go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I think the idea was to come up with something that just sounded broken, and by that I mean like actual, not like. Clanking on things and making it sound broken, but actually like taking a guitar and breaking it, and then when the strings bend, that's the sound we use to create a riff and add drums to, and then using drums that when you hit them the snare caves in, you know. That was the idea. Is just I've always wanted, if you're doing a movie about this broken individual, to have a broken soundtrack, you know. And I don't know if it was a good idea, but I know that it was really fun trying to pull off. And Corey really was looking for something different to do because he had been working on a lot of television shows, and there's a lot of kind of by the book, hey, we're looking for tension, put a riser here that adds the tension, you know. And it's just very, kind of takes the creativity out of being creative sometimes. So yeah, I think the end game was just to get something going that was you know, real ugly sounding, and I think it just really added to the character and the feel of the movie.
It did.
Ryan, it's not every day you get to play tour guide for a friend. Exactly. That was for you. That's a gift from Tom. Tom had this idea, this crazy dialect coming, you know, so that's what we did. Brett, tell us about what goes into the sound design of The Wretched and the to the soundtrack.
I mean, our soundtrack was a composer by the name of Devin Burrows. He's my best friend from second grade. And he's done the music for both of my movies, but the only two movies he's done, but he weirdly enough kind of started as like a guy that did house music for raves. I used to go raves when I was like spinning terrible house music, but he was also like this phenomenal guitarist and just kind of like an all around like music genius. So like years later when I made my first movie, I just said, "Hey, I'm making a movie, man. And you know, do you think you could score a movie?" And we really didn't know if he could. And he sent us like some sample tracks for our first movie. And we're like, my brother are like, "This sounds like a real movie." That was kind of like the response. So we were like so impressed. He did such a great job on our first film. So we came back to him with the second one, and he'd just gotten better and more sophisticated and learned a lot more since then. And he just like, he blew it out of the water, and we just said, like, we need some creepy kind of Jerry Goldsmith sounding kind of horror movie vibes. And like, it was great. And so we just wanted a unique sound for The Witch. And he's like, "Hey, come over to my house." And we went to his house, and he had like bought like five really strange instruments I've never heard of, like from around the world. And he's like, "I just want to like play these for you. You tell me which one sounds like The Witch." And it was this weird one called an Indian sarangi. And he started like doing something on it. And we were like, "That one, that's great." That's so it kind of all grew out from there. So it was, yeah, he's great. He's a super talented guy. I hope he gets to do more films, because I think he's kind of our secret weapon, because he, you know, he did it all himself.
So. That's so cool.
Has The Wretched helped him, you know, get some more work?
I don't know if he's locked anything in specifically yet. I just feel like he's going to, because I mean, a lot of people think we recorded with orchestras and stuff like that, which we did not, you know. I mean, he occasionally busted out the Indian sarangi and like recorded himself in his living room, but other than that, it was him putting it all together on his home system. So it's you know, it's pretty amazing feat on his end. So I hope he definitely deserves to get more work. We'll be working with him in the future just because he did such a great job. So
wow,
that's excellent.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna be close to wrapping up here very soon. We're gonna show another clip, our last two clips back to back from Ryan, and then we'll get into a final, you know, little conversation at the end there, and we'll be finished. But I did want to say real quick, Tom, what's unique about Tom, for those of you who don't know, is that Tom was in a band himself, and he knows music, and it was a Japanese band, or you played in some other countries, and also you were like trying out for like WWE or WWF, or had a career there also.
Wow.
And Arctic wasn't supposed to be Jerry G. Angelo. It was supposed to be some other like Hacksaw Jim Duggan type dude that I forget what his name was, but some big WWE wrestler.
That's right.
tell us real quick on where about your band, your experience, and where you played.
I mean, me being in a band was just about me trying to come out of my shell. Like, that's really all it was. You know, it's just like everyone who's younger and trying to find their voice just wants to scream. That's what being in a band was. And so, you know, I was also working on a wrestling character, so I would bring that to the band, you know, to the shows, and we would try to incite riots and do a bunch of weird stuff. But the deal was, we weren't trying to incite riots to cause any violence. We were trying to incite riots as the butt of the joke, because we thought it was really funny to be self-deprecating. Sometimes the audience agreed and sometimes they did not.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was just kind of like an experimental noisy band thing that I did for a while. Half the show was me just yelling at the crowd, not playing any music, just yelling at the crowd. So nowadays, I only yell at the crowd when it comes to introducing a film at a film festival. Other than that, I stay away from big crowds. So yeah, the performance part of me has since subsided.
Well, you have one of the biggest personalities and crazy. You always seem very calm and all that, but I've seen Tom just have the most fun and be the biggest and loudest. And it's always been a blast to see you, to be with you. Certainly the life of the party. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We did have a quick question from one of our guests. Alexi asked, who is playing Barry in Fried Barry? And the answer is Gary Green. So I just wanted to answer that for you, Alexi, before we move into our last video from Ryan.
And then as for the lead of Fried Barry, I got Gary Green to play Barry. So in 2017, I did shoot like a 3-minute experimental film, also called Fried Barry, but it was a standalone little short, which I didn't expect, you know, for it to do so well. We had like, I think it was like 59 official selections, 13 awards. And yeah, and it's just from that, you know, we had, we started getting all this fan art, and all this fan art was from like all over the world. Which was a bit odd because it was it was just a short film. So I think that probably inspired me a little bit, and I think that just kind of like planted the seed. And then obviously when I made the feature, I had to get Gary. And the thing is with Gary, you know, his background, he's not a trained actor, but he, he's just got that look. And I, as a director, you know, I always love, character actors. And yeah, he just had this cool look and presence, and nobody could have done it better than Gary. And he worked so hard, and there was a lot of big South African actors in the film, and Gary's normally, he's normally an extra normally. So now he's like the lead in this movie, and it was cool because the funny thing was, I mean, I improvised a lot with a lot of the other actors, but then with Gary, he was the only one that didn't improvise, where I had to work with him very closely to make sure I get exactly what I wanted, because I knew the movie relied on this, on this character.
Wow.
But I think the cool thing about this character was that, he was very much, his character mimics humans and mimics, all these people that he meets. And at the same time, when I'm directing Gary, the camera will be here, and then Gary will be there. And then on the side of the camera, I'm looking at Gary and I'm saying to him, copy this face. Now do this face. Now do this face. So at the same time, I'm shooting for the edit, so I know what's going to cut. I know what reactions that I need. And we just kind of played it like that. And Gary didn't know what we were doing until the day that we were shooting, because I knew he would like overthink stuff, and I didn't want him to overthink stuff, and I needed that clean slate every single day. And I think I definitely think it was beneficial to get exactly what I wanted from that. But yeah, so far, I mean, last year and the last few months, we've played a hell of a lot of festivals. We've picked up like 22 awards, 22, 23 awards. So yeah, it's been great. We have a wide release coming soon, and yeah, so it's just been a roller coaster ride. And with all the fan art, people talking about the film, it's just been a great experience. And I think I'm going to look forward to, what's going to happen when it gets released.
Wow, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh man, he definitely has a look.
That's
so cool. Very cool. Yeah, well, he had a much better answer than myself. So more than that, I guess, being an actor, I always wonder how you came up. Obviously you have Jerry for the lead in Arctic. You had some other main actors in there as well. What is the casting process for like for you guys as directors? Do you kind of hand that off to people that you trust? Are you in the room? Is it important to you to feel the chemistry of that actor, especially now since so much of it is self-tape and submit and all that kind of stuff due to COVID?
Well, I mean, for me, it was on our first movie, we Deadheads, we just casted ourselves. It was mostly our friends, you know, or people we knew. And with this one, we had a casting director, but it was our first time with that experience. We didn't really know what that was like. We had no idea. And Drew and I were just paranoid about finding the right people. We sat in on we had physical auditions, and we were there for weeks and weeks. We watched everybody. And then we watched every tape somebody would send us. And I think it's because we were an independent movie. We're just so terrified of not finding the right people that we were like, we gotta be in the room with everybody. And because a lot of my mind, I never really liked how dismissive people are in auditions. They give people like one shot and like kick them out the door. Hmm. And Drew and I sometimes would like almost always have somebody do it twice, just because sometimes it's just nerves or just like somebody's off. Some of the people that ended up in the movie didn't do the best job the first time in a row. They did a fantastic second time. And we said, hey, and talk to him for a minute. You know, that helps a lot. So I like being a part of it because I like people to feel comfortable so that they, you know, it's not their nerves or just like the situation that's screwing them up. You know, they actually get to give it their best shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm usually envisioning, and maybe Brett is the same with you, but I'm usually envisioning who I want in those roles as I'm writing it. So usually that's a big portion of where I go when it comes to going after any specific actors or performers. It's always like, well, what fits what I had in mind? Because if I'm too far off of that, then it may be a situation where, you know, that person not going to be able to excel in that part, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting process. It's just kind of nerve-wracking because even for us, like, we had looked at a billion people, and there was a really important role to play. The mother lives next door, Abby. She's the first person who's really possessed by the witch in the movie. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have any, like, we saw a bunch of people, and we didn't have one person that we thought was going to work. And then she came in, and we were like so thankful because we're like, that was the only person. It was like, I don't know how we were making the movie without her, you know? It was just like, that was the only person we were thinking of. So, yeah, it's crazy.
That's so fun. It's fun to be in this position right now as myself because I look very forward to getting to see The Wretched. Mm-hmm. And it just means that much more being able to, you know, after getting a chance to spend some time with you too. So that's exciting. And then it's same with for Ryan, you know, getting to watch Fright Berry.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you, Tom, for, you know, for introducing all of us. You know, this was really cool. Are you, Tom, are you currently working on getting something going for your next project? And
yeah, I have a couple films I'm working on, and you know, I'm kind of in the pre-production phase of those films. So we'll see what happens.
Sure. Well, I know COVID. You know, hopefully the COVID's kind of coming to a close. I mean, it'll still be with us for a while, but at least maybe making things a little bit more liberal for us to put these projects together. But so much of the budgets now, you know, a good 20-25% of budgets are having to go to
testing and all the COVID.
Gosh,
yeah,
it makes it very difficult for the independent filmmakers for sure. We have a little cat here that has to make an appearance.
She's not going to stop unless you guys take a look at her.
This looks like a black blob. This is Sasha.
Mm-hmm.
Before you guys didn't see, everyone had their dog. See, is Cooper around, Tom?
Cooper's currently taking a nap.
Oh, okay. A labradoodle. anyway, so let's put this thing. In case you guys heard all that meowing, I wasn't sure. Oh, there's
Coop. Oh, wow. My goodness. What a dog. Wow.
That's such a big dog. That's crazy. Well.
Okay.
Out of our price range, right? We won't be able to afford that one. I wonder what the COVID rules would be for animals.
I don't know.
They'd be expensive. No. I know that.
I don't want to find out. Anyway, Brett, I look forward to getting to sitting with you sometime soon with you and Tom.
Yeah.
And all of us. We'll go have some coffee or something. If you look out your window, look up at the Hollywood sign from Las Feliz, and if you just walk over that hill, we're literally right there.
Oh, yeah. Down the street.
We're right off like Forest Lawn and Barham. So.
Oh, I know exactly where you're at. Okay.
Not far at all.
That's cool. Yeah. We definitely gotta hang out when things are better. Hopefully sooner than later.
So guys, thank you so much for coming on to Satellites. We're going to end this with another one of our songs from Helium 3. I believe we're doing Time Traveler today. This is with from David Perry. This is one of the soundtrack songs from The Deception, which is one of our films that's coming out very soon. So anyway,
thank you,
Brett, Tom, and Ryan. I know you can hear us, Ryan. Thank you guys so much. Everyone just... I think from listening to all these stories here, what you can walk away with is that, you know, just go ahead and follow through with what you want to do, what you're inspired by. You know, Tom was inspired by someone breaking into his car and kind of, you know, getting an idea and an inspiration. You know, when I had an inspiration being on the set working as an extra on another feature film that inspired American Warfighter. And like, you know, we heard stories from Brett and Ryan just being, you know, there's a struggle, but if you can turn it around and put one foot in front of the other, make that movement. So
may I also say, Brett, your story definitely re-inspired me that if you are recruited, if you're not building your own dreams, mm-hmm. then people will recruit you to build theirs. So if you're passionate enough, go ahead, go out there and build your dreams and find the right people to build with. So thank you for that.
Awesome. Brett, you guys take care. Tom, we'll see you guys soon.
See you soon, you too,
guys. Stay safe.
You guys.
All right, bye.
You can't keep living in the past. Life goes on, but doesn't last forever. Well, you can't change what's been said or what's been done. It's gone and dead. So what's your worry? So what's your worry? Ooh, time traveler. Ooh, time traveler. Take away your joy, but they're not here. So what's your hurry? So what's your hurry?